the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
We're joined now by a man who has written a fascinating book about, well, into artificial intelligence, but an application of artificial intelligence. It's called Love Machines: How Artificial Intelligence is Transforming Our Relationships. James Muldoon, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Now, what brought you to this particular study as a sociologist?
Well, I thought that the way we talked about artificial intelligence was missing something really big. We tend to talk about AI in terms of the economy and productivity, but what we were missing was the social and relational effects that it was having on our lives. We were so busy thinking about how AI could steal our jobs, we didn't stop to consider that it might be stealing our hearts.
Stealing our hearts in what way?
Well, many people around the world are now forming persistent and ongoing emotional relationships with AI. And that is AI that's been designed to simulate things like friendship, intimacy, perhaps even being a therapist. And we know that 4 out of 5 young people in the UK, for example, have interacted with one of these AI companions, and about half of them are regular users. So particularly among young people, but across the board, this type of kind of relating to AI as if it was your friend or maybe a confidant or a mentor has really gained in popularity.
You've done lots of interviews for this book. You have lots of case studies. So tell us a little bit about the depth of these relationships. Can they be anything more than surface deep?
Well, I think what I really found amongst people that I interviewed was that when AI was particularly appealing for people was in situations where they lacked a lot of, you know, deep, long-term human connections. So a lot of the people would, you know, turn to AI in moments of crisis or loss during their lives, perhaps after a breakup or the death of a loved one or moving to a new city or getting a new job. You know, people are lonely and we're going through a loneliness epidemic. And it's in these kinds of, you know, conditions that AI friendship is really thriving, because what people love about it is that they feel like it's affirming, it's agreeable, and it listens to them. You know, people feel like they have this non-judgmental, very affirming friend in AI companions, and that's what's driving the uptake in demand.
But does that give you all sorts of confirmation bias? Just like if you have friends who only tell you what you want to hear, that's what these AI bots will do for you.
Well, it is one of the issues that people talk about, that they are overly agreeable to the point of sycophantic. And this was something that was pointed out in one of the earlier models of ChatGPT, that it was just simply too agreeable with what the user was putting in. And this is, you know, reflected across the board of AI companion products. And I think what this misses is, you know, the real important role that our friends can play in our lives as being, you know, a little bit critical, there to kind of point out when we might want to change something we're doing. And, you know, not everyone likes that, but I think it is a really important part of friendship that, you know, your friends can see things that you yourself cannot in your own life.
A lot of younger people seem to communicate now by text message, WhatsApp on their phones, rather than actually having conversations on their phones. So how do these AI bots work? Are they having text-based interactions, or are they now appearing as virtual people via video or by audio?
The most common and cheapest way in which AI companions operate is through text conversations that are similar to WhatsApp. However, many people who are in very deep and emotionally resonant relationships with AI companions often do so with companies that produce avatars and kind of 3D images where you can see your AI friend, you can interact with it. And as the cost of voice synthesis technology comes down, and the technology itself is very rapidly improving, voice calls are becoming much more common as well. I think at ChatGPT at the moment, you are limited to like 1 hour of voice per day because it is still quite expensive. But even in the past 24 months, there's been such a remarkable difference in the quality of voice synthesis technology. Even a few years ago, you could really tell this kind of heavily robotic tone and very automated kind of nature of these voices. But today, I think you would fool a lot of people. They're that good, you know, they're barely distinguishable from humans at the highest end of the market.
And can this be addictive in the way that for a lot of people being online, scrolling can be addictive? Can this be addictive? Can it be a way that, for example, teenagers who may not be communicating with other members of their family in the home are quite happy to spend an hour or more online with this invented persona?
Yeah, the average amount, the average time that a user of one of the major platforms, Character AI, spends on it is 2 hours per day, you know, compared to only 30 minutes with some of the legacy social media companies. So we're having this big national conversation at the moment about, you know, whether social media should be banned for certain young people. And I think we need to put AI companions and conversational AI in the mix when we're thinking about this, because it is addictive and people can become very obsessed with it. It's designed to be incredibly engaging. Just imagine, rather than posting something and just waiting for random people on the internet clicking the like button, you have someone that appears as your best friend who's completely obsessed with you, who wants to know everything about you, and who's continually replying to your messages. So people can get very into it. They can kind of forget that it is AI and really immerse themselves in role play and in these kind of imagined worlds, which for some people is fine, but for others who are a bit more vulnerable can be incredibly damaging. And AI can offer harmful advice. We have these horror stories of teens who have used it and have just kind of lost themselves a little bit, which has led to issues of self-harm and suicide. And, you know, some of these companies are getting sued in the US and elsewhere because of how dangerous this product can be in extreme cases.
Let's look at the potential positives, though, because there are people who do suffer from loneliness. And could it be that for those who are in a position where they're unable to form relationships, are maybe isolated, that these can be good things to be able to interact with? That, for example, when you look at one of the major issues out of COVID was when people were actually forced to cocoon or to isolate, that had major issues, particularly with older people, and led to an acceleration in their physical decline. That if we'd had these AI chatbots available for these isolated people during COVID, it might have helped them a lot.
Yeah, and there are some potential beneficial use cases. The main issue that we have at the moment is we just don't have long-term scientific studies that definitively say one way or another. Because on the one hand, we do have studies that show that people, you know, that AI companions can help reduce loneliness. It is effective. There are also studies that show it can, in certain tests, be as good as a human therapist. It has also been found that its responses to humans have been judged to be more empathetic, more emotionally correct than human responses. They're seen to be kind of better listeners and better able to kind of hear and understand people and make people feel like they're being heard. And so they're very popular among certain parts of the population because they do have all these benefits. I think the question, though, is, you know, what happens, you know, after 6 months, a year, several years, if you start to replace all the humans in your life with AI? Because it's just not the same. You know, people talk about, or people I interviewed talked about, kind of suffering these moments when they kind of real, like the curtain falls and they realize it's not real, it is just a simulation. And that can leave people feeling incredibly hollow and empty. There is just no way you can replace the kind of genuine care and love that people receive from humans. And this, you know, this feeling that someone has taken time out of their life to listen to you, that they're nodding along, that they can reflect from their own lived experience, right? And AI is just simulating what it thinks you want to hear. It doesn't actually have a life of its own that it can kind of reflect on and empathize with you in that sense.
And also, there's only aspects of a relationship in that it doesn't offer a physical presence of being in the room, and in cases of closer relationships, the importance of touch.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that there are so many aspects of human-to-human relationships that we can never replace. And I think one of the reasons why they have become so popular is because in some ways, the age of social media and digital technology has, in a sense, degraded and diminished what it means to be someone's friend and to have a human relationship with someone, because, you know, it's only because we regularly interact with each other through WhatsApp and through other text-based conversations. For some of us, it's our primary means of communication, right? For some of us, we don't actually get to see our friends all that much because we're too busy, or we have a limited social circle. So this idea that could be a nourishing form of friendship with AI companions was kind of, we've paved the way for it by basically reducing our human relationships to these kind of periodic messages that we send one another on WhatsApp, which, you know, don't, as you pointed out, they don't give you all of those added benefits and the physiological and biological benefits that you have from in-person communication, right? That it actually is incredibly, it increases your well-being by being around other people, by having a hug, you know, by touching, even just being in their physical proximity. We have a range of biological benefits that we receive. So there are big issues with that if you wanted to replace all of your human friendships and you were just kind of relying on AI, you completely miss out on all of those, you know, physical aspects of being with other people.
James, there's one other thing I want to ask you about, and this is what I suppose a half a century ago would have been the realms of science fiction, but now is becoming real. The idea of almost recreating a loved one who has died via a grief bot or a death bot, using all of the information that has been available about their previous life, the life before they died, and creating an AI persona to repeat that or replicate it for a person who's suffering their loss to interact with. Is that really possible?
It is, and this is one of the most controversial use cases of AI companions, and something I explore in depth in my book, Love Machines, which is to say, you know, relatives that are essentially recreating or simulating a deceased loved one through AI. And, I mean, there are a range of issues that kind of come to the forefront. Firstly, like, most people's reaction to this is, you know, one of shock and horror, that it's, you know, it seems incredibly undignified to, you know, honour the legacy of a departed loved one, to kind of simulate them through what some people see is, you know, a bit of a horror show. But there are those out there who, in their grief, kind of turn to AI because they desperately want to, in their own words, speak to their relative one last time. And for them, it doesn't matter that it is a kind of AI simulation. You know, people find a lot of solace in kind of being able to have conversations that they felt like they missed out on when they were alive. And it's a big issue because, you know, even just turning to one of the main problems, which is the problem of consent. Now, you know, there are some companies that are doing this even without the consent of the deceased, right? That if a relative comes to you and they have all the text messages and all the data of a deceased loved one, the company will just recreate it and recreate them or synthesize them. And there's no laws currently that prevent them from doing so. So I think this, you know, foregrounds this question of regulation. You know, even when the EU's AI Act was being debated, no one really foresaw the problem of AI companions, just this kind of emotional, persistent, long-term connections people could have with personalized AI. So the technology is moving too quickly, and we desperately need, as they're currently debating in China and in California, specific AI companion regulations to really prevent some of these companies from doing things that, you know, a lot of people find quite horrifying.
It's fascinating. The book is called Love Machines: How Artificial Intelligence is Transforming Our Relationships. James Muldoon, thank you very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.